hilarious.
Anyways, well, it looks like our guest of the hour is here, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him in.
All right.
So, welcome, everybody, Mr. Ben Barnes. Dun, 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 dun. It's always so much anticipation.
I know,
waiting
right?
for the bubble to
is
pop
it working?
Up. Yeah.
Are we going to get there?
Is it going to connect?
We never know.
We really never do.
Oh, it connected.
It did. Hi, hello. Ben.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
We're good. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. It's surreal listening to you chat away for the first few minutes and have debates about things from my past and me sort of always wanting to shout the answers like a quiz show.
Ah! Oh, wait. Okay. So we started talking early enough that I didn't think you were there.
Please tell us the answers.
I was being sneaky. Well, one of the, you answered one by coming back around to Stardust. Because when you were saying, oh, his first film was Prince Caspian, and then you threw in Stardust. And I was like, oh, well remembered, 10 points to Gryffindor, well done.
Amazing. I give that one goes to, so you have actually Lindsay and Lindsay
yes.
on this call. It's
me and Lindsay.
A double Lindsay hour. So yeah, that one goes to the other Lindsay. Way to go.
Miss Lindsay and Miss Lindsay.
Oh, yes. Yes.
We'll take it.
since you knighted me, that's the only time that is ever going to happen.
Oh, gosh.
Amazing. So where are you calling from today?
I've been bouncing around an awful lot, actually. I just came from 6 months in Budapest filming and then straight to London, and I'm about to go back to France tomorrow to do a little convention, but my home base is in Los Angeles.
Oh my gosh! Wow, you travel a lot. You make us look like we're homebodies. That's amazing. And Budapest is one of the most beautiful places, I think. What were you filming there?
It is a glorious place. I was filming the second season of a Netflix fantasy show that I'm involved with called Shadow and Bone, which is
yes.
based on a series of fantasy books. Yeah.
Yes, I've watched it. I started watching it, so I haven't yet finished it. But oh my gosh, it's
got,
really,
and then,
really
and then,
good.
And then got very, very bored and
had
to stop.
No, I finished it and I quite enjoyed it.
I just Amazing. Started it when I found out I was going to be interviewing you, and I just haven't finished it
good.
Yet.
Very good. Very good. Very good.
As I started talking, I realized what it sounded like, and I was like, oh no, no, stop.
I'm curious, Ben, have you read the books that the show is based off of?
I have. I hadn't come across them before, although I do like fantasy literature in general. I actually studied one of my special topics at university was children's literature, which I chose because I thought the books would be shorter and I'd be able to get through them quicker.
Very strategic.
It was very strategic, but I ended up kind of falling in love with a lot of it. And I actually, I was sort of 20 years old and I was writing essays about Harry Potter and Philip Pullman and Lord of the Rings, which you guys were just talking about. So it kind of set me up and prepared me much better for a career which has a lot more fantasy in it than I had ever imagined it would.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. And it's funny, as I was looking at all the things you've been in and also the things I know you from, I was, all the costumes you're wearing, I'm like, oh my gosh, if I ever was to be an actor, those are all my dream types of roles to play. Like, anyways, it's really fun, the worlds you get to be a part of. But I've also always wondered, when you're in these kind of films, are there certain challenges to filming fantasy? Like, I'm imagining there'd be a lot of green screen. I don't know, sometimes you have to ride horses, sometimes you're sword fighting. So, like, what are some of the challenges of being in these kind of films?
I mean, I love the sort of skill set stuff, the sword fighting, horse riding, sort of learning all those different skill sets, but different things. I think that appeals to me hugely when you sort of take on a new thing. You're like, oh, I'm going to learn to, dice a carrot like a chef, or I'm going to learn to, you know, do whatever it might be. I'm going to have to play the guitar in this film, and I have fingers made of sausages, help me. those kind of things, I think, are really exciting. I think also because I was in my sort of formative period of my career where I didn't know anything at all. You're talking about Stardust, that was my first ever job, and my first ever scene I ever shot was sort of walking through this magical, mystical marketplace, looking at creatures in jars and amazing plants and actors with amazing faces. And I remember Matthew Vaughan, who was the director on that, I was looking around the set and he went, no, off, go back behind that door. And I was thinking, what's happening? He's like, I want the face that you're doing, looking at everything right now with utter awe, is the face that I need you to do on camera. So let's just look at it when you actually look at it.
Amazing.
So I was sort of tricked into my first ever scene I did on screen, and I've been trying to trick myself into it ever since, I think. But I have this kind of awe and wonder about fantasy sets and fantasy costumes, like you said, and being around that kind of all that paraphernalia and those kind of full worlds, which you have to, you know, curate every single detail of. I kind of find those that kind of very appealing, whether I'm reading it, watching it, or being in it.
Oh, absolutely.
But you're right about the green screen and the following a tennis ball on the end of a stick, or someone shout, you know, an AD, an assistant director kind of shouting into a microphone, okay, and then the dragon is going to swoop down and it's sort of clear, it's almost clutching your face. Okay, drop down. And always in this very kind of nasal, not very committed kind of a way, which is always kind of fun.
Do they play music? Like, is there something to give a vibe, or is it literally like a silent set with some PA's voice?
Do you know what I remember not like dramatic music to get you into it, but I do remember Andrew Adamson, who directed all the Shrek movies, and he directed the first two Narnia films. I remember he was trying to get like the kids, they're not kids anymore, but the kids to like walk in with some real swag, like he wanted them to feel really confident. So I remember him playing some Kanye for them walking into this medieval battle scene really loud on these speakers. It's the only time I ever remember him sort of using music in that way. But the scene is in slow motion in these sort of, these teens, early 20s are like walking into the scene with this like real, you know, stank face and rolling their shoulders.
Yeah.
And it really works. You know, tricking yourself is everything, I think, in this business.
Oh, 100%. I'd definitely be like, put on some Pirates of the Caribbean or something to make me feel like I'm in a fantasy world. Because music can be so transformative. And I mean, I just imagine if I was filming my music videos and there was no music, you know, and I'm trying to like put on this expression and this show of something, I would feel, I would have a really hard time stepping into that place.
It's so interesting you talk about that, because that's something that I have stepped into only very recently. I've done two music videos only sort of in the last couple of years, and I found that a very kind of interesting organic process, because they're sort of playing this song which has then evolved over such a long period of time, which was just at one point you sitting at your piano messing around, feeling things, whatever it might have been, and then it becomes this full and complete thing, and then you're trying to set images to it, and then you're playing a character which is you but without dialogue. And I just find it a very fulfilling experience. I wonder if you kind of have had the same kind of thing.
Oh yes, I mean, I love making music videos. I feel like it's kind of the full circle once I get from the writing all the way to the music video, because I mean, years ago I went to film school, and so getting to then be on set and like think about how I want to convey it visually, because to me that's like a huge part of the art. And I love music video day, and I direct them, and it just gets me like, I get super pumped about it.
You direct them as well? That's incredible.
Well, thank you. It's like all that film school went fully into making music videos.
But also, it's such a personal, thing, isn't it? To write a song and record it and sing it or play it and then set images to it. So to have that control, I remember coming up with ideas for my first music video, and I was lucky to get one of the directors actually from Shadow and Bone to come and direct it for me.
Oh, cool. Wait, which one?
I basically begged him. His name is Lee Tolan Krieger, and he directed the pilot episodes.
Amazing.
And he's just an amazing movie director. But he came in and did it for me absolutely as a favor, because I just clutched at his ankles until he promised to help me. But I remember sort of describing specific shots to him that I wanted, and then there was a couple of shots that I wasn't in that I was sort of watching on the monitor thinking, oh, this was in my head a month ago, this exact thing. And I found it felt quite moving, because I haven't had for 20 years that much to do with the composition of the shots and which stories are being told, only sort of my contribution to how it's being told. So to have that sort of feel like you have that ownership of actually making something from scratch, from a blank piece of paper, or just from your brain or from your heart, and then seeing it in a sort of concrete way on a screen was quite a sort of big moment for me, it felt like, somehow.
Yeah, actually, I didn't think about that, how that must be so different from, like, when you're on these huge shows, like, you don't probably, you know, you don't always get to be a part of how it comes out. You do your part, you do your acting, but in this case, I'm imagining you had full creative control over it, and,
exactly.
You know, that's really cool. And I'm curious, what was it that prompted this EP? Like, have you always wanted to be more involved with music?
I have always wanted. That's what I thought I would do. I actually have a rather cringy 19-year-old boy band past moment, which has been brought up.
Oh, you were talking to... No, that's not cringe. You're talking to two huge boy bands.
I still have an NSYNC poster, like, hanging on my road case.
We went to the Backstreet Boys concert probably 2 months ago and had the best night
of
our lives.
We lost our voices.
Yeah. So anyways, all I'm saying is that that's not cringy.
We're on board.
We're for it.
I actually had my birthday the other day, and I did the dinner. Somebody sort of brought it up, and they were pulling up various pictures. And I remember describing that we had a start. We only ever did like two performances, I think, because I quit after 2 weeks. I quit after 2 weeks because I was too embarrassed. I was too embarrassed. But I remember there being a stylist saying, "Who do you want to dress like?" And I was like, "Maybe I could have a hood like Justin Timberlake," in the most British 19-year-old way I could think of to say it. And I mean, they did give me a hood. So, but it was definitely a moment that I remember.
Wait a second, we're pulling up pictures right now.
Oh, please. Thankfully, this is a listening medium, so not everyone.
Yes, everybody else, quick, Google.
Don't Google, right? Yeah.
Yeah, nobody else. Don't worry, you're safe.
I mean, how many? I think all of us wanted to be in.
I was gonna say,
in like the mid-2000s. That's normal.
Yeah, this is. And you were doing it. So I think you were living the dream personally.
The dream.
But I hate to tell you, in the Google images, there is no hood. I'm really sorry.
Oh, no. But, yeah, that's what I thought I would do at that age. I signed to a music manager called Simon Fuller, and I was recording some jazz songs with a big band with him at age 19. And I really thought that was what I would sort of be doing, but the project didn't really ever get off the ground. I think it was the very first year that there was ever one of those Pop Idol shows, and that kind of took over the whole of the music market in about 2 seconds. And we sort of never came back to it. And I felt quite disillusioned and disappointed about it, I think. And it honestly took me 20, and I sort of got, the music sort of fell away, even though music has been a part of quite a lot of the film projects that I've done, which I've absolutely loved. But the actual making music part of my life felt like it went away for about 20 years. And then I think at the beginning of the pandemic, when everyone found themselves with this time and existential crises on their hands, I think I was flashing forward to an 80, 90-year-old version of myself berating me for never having put something out that I just made that I love doing, and for not being bold enough to just do it. And I think that's what sort of spurred me on through that time to just make the move to be a bit more public about music that I was making.
That's amazing. So you wrote these songs and, you know, recorded them during the pandemic. That's kind of the kickoff factor for it.
They weren't all written during that time. I think I've always had like notebooks around, which I've had little bridges and verses here. I love words. I studied, you know, English literature, and obviously like scripts and dialogue and stuff is like a huge part of everything that I do. And you know, I love kind of fitting words together like a sort of a very romantic crossword. But it was the sort of compiling of it and choosing which songs went together, and some of them were written during the beginning of the pandemic as well. And then I just sort of pushed a little bit harder and to sort of ask people if they knew people who might be willing to sort of help me, you know, facilitate making it into something that I could share.
Yeah. Well, it's such a good EP. Exactly. Oh, no, it's so good. It's
that
like
a
really fun.
Congratulations on your album coming up, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm like the, it's my album Eve, I guess you could say.
Oh my gosh, it is.
Yeah, album, happy album Eve.
Wow.
Happy
album
Eve.
I can't believe
Eve.
It's here. But yeah, when I was listening to it, there's such a nice blend of, it's kind of like a bit of crooner music, but also it's got pop influence in it. It also has like a bit of a theatrical flair, and you have an amazing voice. So
thank you.
Anyways,
well,
I think it was really fun.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. I wanted it to, one of the sort of compliment that I took to heart the most was just one of my very close friends sort of listened to it before I put it out, and said, it sounds like you as a person, you know, it sort of, the style of the music sounds like you are. And that made me feel like I'd sort of done something authentic, which felt good after sort of 20 years of pretending to be other people and wearing other people's clothes and hats and all of that. And that felt like a really interesting moment for me. And I think I started to sort of think about art in a slightly different way, I think.
That's so interesting. Like the switch between playing roles of other people versus getting to be like just 100% yourself. Mm. That's really interesting. And I'm really impressed with the vulnerability that you showed in it, like in the music videos and just like what the songs are about. And so I don't know what, I guess, gave you the courage to be this vulnerable, and, you know, I guess, where did it come from?
Well, I think I've always been quite a sort of private person when it comes to, you know, being somewhat in the public eye, being on TV and everything. And, you know, I think my parents being in the sort of psychotherapy, psychiatry world always made me feel like it was important to keep some parts of your life sort of more sacred or for you or whatever. And I think when the Narnia films came out, it was quite a sort of onslaught of questions and not in a particularly invasive way, but it was just a lot at one time. And I remember feeling quite overwhelmed by it at the time. But I think, you know, you turn 40, you realize that life is short and precious, and music is for sharing, and life is for sharing, and stories are for sharing and telling. And you know, lyrics are essentially just poetry, and music is like the poetry of life. I started thinking about like a film like Dead Poets Society, where Robin Williams talks about, you know, all the noble pursuits in life of the things that we do to achieve. But like, poetry and music and art and romance and all of that that's what we do with our lives, but those are the things you stay alive for. And I was just like, sort of share a little bit about, you know, who I am without it being something frightening. And I was rewarded by people kind of responding in a very personal way, saying, I'm gonna get a tattoo of this line that you said, or you know, this song actually meant something to me about something completely different than it did for you about my life, you know. And that mm-hmm. is something that I haven't engaged with before, having not written any of the films or anything that I've been in.
Yeah. No, that's really powerful, you know, to be able to connect with people when it does truly feel like, oh, this is me. Mm-hmm. This is the version of me that I got to choose to put into the world. So, yeah, were people surprised, like, by you releasing music? Like, what was the reaction like from people?
I think so. I think when I sort of first told them I was going to do it, but a lot of the people who know me well were like, well, good, it's about time. You know, I sort of, what have you got? There is nothing to lose with it. And that support was very, felt very important, because it did feel like I was wary that people might think I was sort of just trying to spread myself thin and sort of show off that I could do something, or what. I don't know, it's a very British mentality of like, you should stick in your lane, which I do, you know, I sometimes feel that way about things, but it was just too important to me not to try to do. And it's led to being able to like sing, record with some other bands in Los Angeles or meet other musicians. I've met some incredible singers and musicians and things through the process of making it. And there's a sort of different language that you can speak when you've done it yourself. You don't feel like a complete imposter in the room, which is kind of a lovely community to feel part of. And also, I think when you express yourself musically, you're expressing through the ages and the history of all the music you've ever listened to as well. Like you say, like there's the jazz and the Rat Pack stuff that I listened to when I was 19 that is influencing. There's the musical theater that I've done is in there. There's the Ray Charles and the Stevie Wonder and the Donny Hathaway and the stuff that I just love the most. There's a little bit of that in there. There's just a little piece of, and then some of the lyrically, there's obviously like stuff from the poetry and the books that I've read over my life. There's all the things that you ever were and have ever ingested are sort of fed through into what you make. And I think that tells people a lot about you without having to sit down and tell them your life story.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
No, it's so, I can't tell if you just are amazing with words or if it's your accent, but I think it's a combo of both. I'm like, no, this is so insightful.
It's a veneer. It's an accent that's out of place. That's why I moved to America, so I would feel a little bit more special and different. I would feel less invisible if I was a bit different.
Oh my gosh. Well, I don't think anyone ever would, I don't know. No one thinks American accents are cool though. We just are enamored with your guys's, right? Like
British,
you guys.
Well, no, British people do. When I was growing up, it was all we watched was Friends and Frasier and all these Party of Five, all these American shows.
Yeah.
And it was all very Hollywood and very sexy. And all the movies that anyone ever ingested, all the action movies, all the, you know, all of it was all, you know, it's very like American centric culture, I think, in the 80s, at least. My home is covered with in posters of Back to the Future and the Karate Kid and all these like, these sort of like young American 80s quest movies, you know, even romantically, it's Harry Met Sally and it's all these, you know, they're
it's
all American.
So you're telling me that if I moved to London, I would sound charming and intelligent just by opening my mouth.
And just by virtue of being different.
Just by, okay. I'm reevaluating my life choices, maybe. Okay.
Come on, you're funny. You're so funny and wonderful. You'd be engaging wherever you went.
You are too kind. So wait, now that you've done both music and acting, do you find that there is like, I don't know, a lot of crossover in like the disciplines or the skills that it takes to be involved in like these two different things?
Well, I feel that the some of the acting projects that I've been involved with that had music at the heart of them were my favorites. So to be able to do both, I think like I did a film called Jackie and Ryan with Katherine Heigl, which was a music film in which I played like a Southern street busker, train hopping street busker. And I was playing all this old American folk music. And that was, you know, one of my favorite things I've ever done. There's real like soul to that film, I think. And you know, it's hard in this career, I think, to like get to a point where you can sit down and say, oh, I'm proud of that. And I think that was a bit of a turning point for me after about 15 years of doing it, where I was like, oh, I'm proud of this, I think. am I?
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know, because it was drawing on a lot of different things that I felt like I loved and mm-hmm. had worked hard on. I did another film called Killing Bono, which was a ridiculous Irish comedy about some kids who in real life went to school with the boys who became U2. And it's written by the guys who wrote The Commitments, which is one of my favorite all-time music films. So I've been really lucky to be able to use a lot of that passion in the context of films. But they definitely sort of scratch a different itch for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And, you know, kind of going back to what you just said, I'm curious, what project is the one you've done that you are the most proud of?
I think they're different ones for different reasons. I mean, Jack and Ryan is certainly one of those films that I look at as a whole and find it very watchable. So I'm proud of the sort of performance of it and the work that I put into it. But I think that being involved with something, I did a TV show a few years ago called Westworld, which was just such a big sort of hit with people, and people seemed to really like it. And I really had fun. I had so much fun playing my character in that show. He was so kind of mischievous and rude, and it was so fun to getting to work every day and putting that literal hat on. And so I'm so proud that there's such amazing people involved with it. I'm sort of proud to be a part of that. And then also, obviously, the Narnia films were so sort of seminal in my life in terms of the adventure of them and that it made me, you know, who I am, really. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very proud of being a part of that as well. But there are so many. I mean, I'm sort of lucky in that I try really hard to make whatever the thing is I'm doing at the moment the most important thing and the thing that I will be the proudest of. And it doesn't always work, but I think, like, I'm always very encouraging to other actors to sort of, like, not worry about, if I work with younger actors, to not worry about what the next job is or what this could do for you. It's more about enjoying this one and being here and playing this character and being with these people in this city or this country. And I think that served me quite well, keeping that at near the top of my priority list.
No, I love that. And I think that my other Lindsay sitting right here, yeah. she's a perfect example. She has, I think one of my favorite things about you, Lindsay, is she has this amazing knack for loving the moment she's in. And, like, if she's eating a piece of toast, it's the best freaking piece of toast she's ever had. And
amazing.
So I just, it's something that I, like, try to embody, is that idea of, like, hey, I'm working on this project, let's make it the best one yet. Or, like, let's feel like this is my favorite right now because it's what I'm living. And, you know, they always say the only moment that's actually real is the one you're experiencing. Yeah. So, like, make
it the best. The future doesn't exist and the past is gone. So, I mean, it's easy to say.
Right.
I want to ask you a question. Do you find you have got better at that as you get older or worse? Because I think I'm getting worse at it. Maybe it was just the pandemic and all of that, but I feel like staying in the present moment becomes something you have to work on more as you get older, for me.
You know, I feel like I had a bit of, like, a dip in the middle. Like, I was so good at it. You know, of course, when you're young and, you know, naive and you're still, like, everything seems like it's ahead of you. I feel like it's so much easier to stay in the moment because you're experiencing so many firsts, you know? But I do feel like once
absolutely.
I got well into my career and I'd been living my dream for a little bit of time, I had this kind of a dip where suddenly I was never in the present and I was always focusing on the next or the past. And, but I do feel like, honestly, I think the pandemic kind of helped snap me out of that. Just some of the things that, you know, we all experienced. And I feel like now I'm almost a little bit back to that version of myself that enjoys and lives in, like, the moments. And I've worked a lot on gratitude so I feel like I'm back in the game again.
good for you. I feel like the pandemic was trying to suck me into this vortex of the past and the future and not allowing me to stay in the moment. But I feel like you, I feel like I'm slowly climbing out of that now into back into the now.
Yeah, no, for sure. Do you, just some of the things you said made me think, do you, like, read wellness books or do you like that kind of space of, like, self-help books, wellness, all that stuff?
I'm not sure about self-help particularly, but I do like books that are sort of about psychology. I like the books like Humankind or Sapiens or The Righteous Mind or Mo Gordat's book about being happy. I think that I'm interested in the sort of psychology of happiness.
Yes. We actually, oh my gosh, we had the most amazing conversation. I think you would love this book. I just finished it, but it's the author is Sean Aker, and he has this book called The Happiness Advantage that was, I don't know, just kind of life-changing. It took all these things that I've always like thought and like put science behind them. Anyways, just saying, if you like those kind of books, based on some of the things you've said, I was like, he sounds like he likes this kind of stuff, but anyways, just a little side tangent. So you mentioned like, you know, all these projects you've been a part of, like Westworld and Narnia. And so is it different approaching a role that's based on like, you know, a franchise or that has like a fan following already and people love these characters? Like, I don't know, is that intimidating or do you like that?
I think I was introduced to it so early. I think I've done more projects based on sort of book sets of books, fancy books or famous novels or whatever, than I have original material. So I think for me, it just sort of seems like the way of things have the source material to go back to and refer to. And I think with the show Shadow and Bone that I'm involved with at the moment, I'm lucky enough to be in contact with the author of the book. So I can chat to her about moments in the books and I can sometimes I would text her in the middle of shooting and say I'm trying to get this line from chapter 12 of this into this scene, would you like that idea, and then I would pitch it to the directors and the showrunners.
That's cool.
So that's kind of been a really fun really fun part of it, but sometimes it's a lot of pressure. I did a film version of Dorian Gray, which I was so excited about doing with Colin Firth, who's one of my favorite actors and favorite people. We became very close after doing two films together, and the film didn't really chime with people for whatever reason, and that I feel like, you know, I really felt like I'd let people down after that film came out. And it was definitely a moment for me where I thought about maybe I was too fragile to be doing this kind of work because the criticism was heavy. But I think, you know, with beloved things that people really love, they can really turn on you. And sometimes the thing they really love can be you. And if you disappoint people, people can turn on you then too. But I think in general, it doesn't really make a difference whether it's something that has source material or not, because you make up the rest of the life of these people in your head.
Right.
Yeah. I think that I also felt pressure doing the Marvel series that I did, The Punisher, because I was sort of playing a Marine and I worried that people wouldn't take me seriously. Based on reasonable, I think, insecurities that most people have. You see these Marvel superheroes and you think, I don't fit this mold. So what am I going to do to make my character stand out and feel interesting and dynamic and spontaneous and scary and powerful, and so you go in with this sort of agenda for yourself, which can feel a bit intimidating until you find your way into it.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And you know, I don't know, how do you deal with the public critique? You know, anytime someone's in the arts or in the public eye, like I feel like everybody has to learn their own way to deal with it / recover from moments of harsh critique. So, you know, what's helped you with that?
I think having really wonderful people in my life that I've curated that are so supportive no matter what and will defend you to the death, and friends and family and loved ones that really know you and were there to remind you that of what's real and what's on the internet and what's in a stinking review that's written by somebody who hasn't necessarily earned an opinion more valid than yours is, or more valid than the person who saw that project and loved it. Or you know, there are certain things I've done that got critiqued heavily at the time, and now they're on every Christmas in England and people go wild for them. And you know, there are plenty of those big movies that came out, and when they came out at the time were sort of raked over the coals and are now beloved. And I think that that goes for people in the world as well. You know, there are moments in people's lives that, where people judge them harshly, and then you sort of, the truth will, you know, the truth will always kind of rise to the top. And I think hopefully in the end, goodness and hope and sort of grace, hopefully eventually also rise to the top in people's sort of communal behavior.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I like, yeah, just, it's so true that we sometimes can get so focused on like these comments from people we've never even met. And then, you know, as long as you have the people around you though, to remind you of like, what's actually important, the opinions in your life that actually matter. And, you know, like you said, just surrounding yourself with those loved ones. Anyway, sorry, what were you gonna say?
Sorry, I was gonna say, and not just important, but what's real, because these people don't know the process. And of course, when you're making art, everybody has, everybody's allowed to be a critic. I certainly am when I'm watching mm-hmm. the TV and a storyline doesn't go the way I want, I'll scream at the TV as much as the next person. But everybody is allowed to be a critic of art and behavior in this day and age. It's something we have to just get used to.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I always remind myself too that like, I'm not a fan of everything, you know, like you were saying, you sometimes scream at the TV because it's not the way you would have done it, you know, and I don't exactly love every musician's art. And so why should I be like, I actually watched someone reviewing one of my latest videos and they were definitely like not a fan of my art. And I had to sit back and be like, you know what? That's okay. Like, I'm a very niche artist. That's okay if he thinks I'm ridiculous. Like, you know, the same thing that he thinks is ridiculous about my art is the very same thing that this other person really likes about my art. You can't please everybody. So,
well, remembering, you know, very same moment where you were listening to a song in the radio and you like turned it off because you don't like it, or switched the station after 5 seconds, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, there will be people who switch over your stuff after 5 seconds, and that's okay.
Right. That's
okay.
They don't
have to listen. They can choose to consume something else.
For sure. And I'm curious, do you ever rewatch your movies, your projects, or do you not?
I tend to leave them where they are. I do watch them. I know there are a lot of people who don't watch, but I felt it was a very important part of my learning process to be better and become better as an actor. And I always want to be trying to be better and challenging myself in that way. And I think I'm divorced enough to be able to look at a performance and think, oh, next time I would do it a bit more like this without it sort of crippling me. So it was a very important thing, but I do tend to watch things once. I can't remember the last thing that I was involved with that I've seen more than one time. That feels a bit indulgent or something to me.
Yeah. No, I think that I'm always shocked when people are like, oh, I never watch my films. I'm like, wait, one, all that work and you never got to see how it was put together. But also, like you said, just almost like reviewing tapes like Kobe Bryant would do after the game day, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I think that some people are built that way and some people aren't. Some people would feel like if they were to watch themselves, they would judge it. And then it would be more like reading your own reviews, which nobody should do. So it's more like that, I think, for some people.
Yeah.
Whereas if you know, you can be a step removed.
No, that makes sense. Well, I know that, you know, we're going to let you go soon. We want to be respectful of your time, but before we do
happy.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being here and being so delightful. This has just been so fun. And is there anything, like, I know you have some upcoming projects, like you're actually in some upcoming like horror and thriller stuff, right?
Yeah, there's a few things that I haven't sort of, worlds that I haven't really explored. I think it's October, the Cabinet of Curiosities, which is Guillermo del Toro's anthology horror series, comes out. And I was involved in one of the sort of big episodes of that.
What level scary are we talking here? Is it like a, you know, such a wimp. I wish I could really die.
Yeah, me too. I don't watch horror. I've always said no to every horror I've ever been offered because I just find it. I'm okay with sort of jump scare horror or sort of nasty thriller stuff or violent stuff, but I'm not good with creepy. I don't like things that make me feel like I'm like someone sort of breathing down your neck, kind of creep. I don't like films like Carrie and those kind of things. They just, or like those kind of things creep me out.
People are being possessed and stuff. I don't like that.
And actually what's really funny is I did this episode and I thought ours was a little bit more sort of psychological. It was period. It felt like it was a sort of mini film about something else based on an H.P. Lovecraft story. About artists through the ages, and it's but it does have a horrifying sort of twist slash ending. Ooh. Slash
maybe we could do it together, like, you know, maybe Lindsay and I can watch it, so we could, that way we're not by ourselves, and you know, I don't know. We're both such wimps.
Netflix just asked me to post the like trailer for all the episodes together, and I honestly couldn't even get through watching the trailer. I posted it without looking. I was like, this is horrible looking.
That's very validating to me, though, to hear that.
Like, right, you were in it, and you were scared.
Yeah.
So,
terrifying. They can do a lot with crunchy noises and lights and weird. You know, they can really mess with you.
Yeah, I didn't even watch the last season of Stranger Things because people were like, Lindsay, I don't think you'll be able to handle it. Like my sisters were telling me, my little sisters, mind you, were telling me it was too scary for me. So, but I do love a good period piece. I'm such a sucker for anything that's like that. So I don't know, maybe I'll give it a go.
Well, I did. The other thing I just finished was a more gentle British thriller. About a theatre critic in the 1930s, which is maybe more your speed.
Okay, I think I could handle that. So, last question for you, for all the fans that love Shadow and Bones, is there anything that you know can tell us to expect from season 2? And when is it coming out?
I'm not sure when it's coming out yet. I don't think they've actually set a date, but we have finished shooting it, and the first season felt like it had some real scale and scope to it in terms of the world building and characters and everything, monsters, etc. But this is on crack. This is really it's stepped up a few gears in terms of the amount of characters and worlds that are visited and like the action and all of the kind of like the just the general like pace of it is dialed up to 11, I would say. It has some incredible moments from the books, but also it has some kind of fresh stuff in, because we're doing two sets of books at the same time, that the ways that they link together all has to be kind of new. So even for people who know the books, there are going to be sort of diversions. So interestingly, when I was shooting, there were things from the books that I was like, I really want to say these. I had my dream list of 10 lines that I was from the books that I was like, I really want to say these lines in this series, in the season somewhere. We got them all in, which I was thrilled about.
I think that's so cool that you not only read the books and learned the characters, but you learned the character so much that you really had your way that you wanted to represent him. I think that's really cool.
Well, there were also things that were the opposite of that. There were things that weren't in the books and weren't in the scripts at all that I was like, it would be really interesting if he was dealing with this problem. And even some of those things we kind of managed to thread through as well, in terms of just like the show that we were building as it evolved, we were able to kind of surf the creativity of it to be able to make something that feels really, really new and collaborative with that. And that was like really exciting, because I think it's taken 20 years of doing this for anyone to care that I would have an opinion like that.
I was just going to say, is that normal? Like, I feel like I don't hear that a lot, where actors get to kind of be so involved through the creativity of the project. Like, that is that common? Or
I wasn't writing any of it or anything, but it was just like discussions. Right. We have a very warm, open, brilliant set of showrunners. And Eric Kaiser being the sort of lead showrunner on it, and Dagan Freiland, who did this season, And they were just very open to like chatting about it because they're really passionate about it and they really love it. And I think that we have a cast that really loves the stories and showrunners that really love the stories. And so in talking about it, we get excited about little ideas and then they sort of, they thread them through. It's just about being passionate, I think, rather than dictating anything.
Absolutely. And I feel like those are always the best projects when there's like those kind of through lines of anybody or everybody is a part of this and can, you know, like there's not this like super hierarchy. I feel like the best creativity comes out when that's the case. And it truly, like you said, becomes very collaborative.
Yeah. And also you have the lived experience of pretending to be this person for the most amount of time and seeing it through one very specific lens. It's like when someone if someone were to offer you a lyric for a song that you were writing, it would either instantly chime with you and feel like it was exactly what you were trying to say, or you would be like, that's not it at all.
Yes. You know, I feel like the most prolific moment I've ever seen that happen was I did a project years ago with the Muppets. And it was a music video. It was super fun. And I came to them with the treatment of this music video. And it started with a little bit of like dialogue between like me and Miss Piggy. And as I pitched them my idea, they sat there and the characters that actually play these people, you know, these Muppets, they were like, oh, well, Miss Piggy would never say that. You know, it was just so funny. Like,
exactly.
We were such real beings to them. And then they started riffing. Anyways, it was so fast. It was the first time I'd ever really come in contact with that in the professional world.
Brilliant. And I just
sat back and watched them like in awe of like, they know these are people to them.
Yeah.
It was anyways. So
they're Muppets.
So, okay. All right.
Yeah. they're real to us. Okay.
Yeah. They're real.
Oh, is there anything else you want to say that maybe I didn't ask about or anything else you're excited to, you know, share with us?
Not really. I just had a lovely time chatting with you. Thank you so much. It's been brilliant.
Oh, well, thank you. And best of luck in France or wherever you are going next, all over the
thank
world
you.
And travel
and
safe.
Best of luck with your album release. I should be downloading it tomorrow.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you so much. All right. Take care.
Goodbye, Miss Lindsay.
Goodbye.